Back in 1990, my family and I lived in Dorchester, Massachusetts, a city neighborhood, the Boston equivalent of living in a place like East Liberty in Pittsburgh. And a really unpleasant consequence of this inner city home base was tangling daily with the demoralizing traffic on the famed Southeast Expressway, home of the Big Dig. Just imagine a freeway on steroids. I recall one particular afternoon when I had packed up my then 4-year-old son, Sam, in the back seat of my minivan, and I was making a mad dash for the Charlestown Navy Yard, less than 10 miles away, where a replica Viking ship was docked for the day. We had exactly 45 minutes to get there, park, and scurry over to the dock. It would be a squeaker. The minutes ticked away as we sat absolutely immobilized in gridlock traffic. And when it became apparent that we were not going to beat the clock, I turned to Sam and gingerly broke the news. "I'm sorry, Sam, but I'm afraid that by the time we get there, the ship will be closed." I braced myself for 4-year-old tearful disappointment, maybe even a tantrum, but instead he gazed out the window for a moment, and then he replied, "I guess it doesn't matter when we drive the other way, Mom, because home never closes." Well, my heart flooded full with emotion, and I was speechless. For in Sam's profound innocence, or his innocent profundity, my young son had told me what every parent wants to know, that he felt safe, worthy, welcome, loved in his home, that to him it was a home that never closes. I knew then, and I know now, that it is a blessing and a responsibility to ensure that my front door is never locked to him or his sister, Michaela, that the home fires will never be extinguished, especially after their father and I divorced in 2001, and home became a binuclear reality. Two homes had turned out in Concord, Massachusetts, that never closed with an open path between them, a reason for gratitude then and now. Neither of my children will be with me for Thanksgiving. We will chat on Zoom conference from Barcelona, where my son lives, and Portland, Oregon, where my daughter lives. Isn't technology grand? And this will be my 6th Thanksgiving in Pittsburgh, my hometown, which continues to surprise me. These two facts are significant because no other holiday is as hardwired into the American psyche to an idealized notion of home than Thanksgiving. Everywhere, there are those prosaic images of dew-kissed butterballs and sparkling cranberries being joyfully devoured by apple-cheeked, intact families drawn directly from the Norman Rockwell sketchbook. They gobble mountains of stuffing, pick the marshmallows out of the Jell-O mold, fight over the last crescent roll, and perhaps they even join in a rousing rendition of our UU written hymn, "Over the River and Through the Woods." "Hooray for the fun," they sing. "Are the puddings done? Hooray for the pumpkin pie." Although this homespun Thanksgiving is not a complete fantasy, we do well to remind ourselves that it is a home sweet home so sugar-coated it could give us a cavity. America clings to its myths, reveres them, yet I am more aware than ever that we, middle class, mostly white, represent the lucky ones with the luxury of choice, roofs over our heads, and leftovers in the fridge, even if we are a far cry from the Rockwell myth. Last year, around this time, on the TV program 60 Minutes, Scott Pelley revisited American families who had lost their homes in the economic cataclysm of the past decade. During his first report, home was a seedy motel room. A year later, home for these same families is a car or a tent or the street. Toxic capitalism has made nomads of our children. At the Pittsburgh Food Pantry, where I volunteered, former donors are now clients, supplementing their groceries with pantry offerings and food stamps. These are our neighbors. Where is the home that never closes for them? We're reminded at Thanksgiving, especially by the realities around us, that home can surely be a loving place, where the heart is, a comforting place that never closes, where there's love overflowing, even for families living in tents and motels. Yet sadly, home can also be a place where the heart aches. Perky holiday images pain us when the nuclear family has become lethally radioactive, when the gate is latched, the door is locked, and the lights have dimmed in our family of origin or the one of our own making. That home may be closed to us now because of differences in religious beliefs, tensions over sexual orientation, gender identity, lifestyle, personality, and oh, this year, political leanings, especially after this bruising, divisive election. Or maybe we just don't get along anymore with people in our family. Perhaps the wrecking ball of divorce, alcoholism, mental illness, abuse, or some other disruption or suffering has made this original home a house condemned. So what can we do? Where can we go? We can grieve and endure the agony of our damaged homes, or we can grieve and carry home with us in our heart to a new address. In the beautiful and moving Old Testament story of Ruth, the title character chooses not to return home to her father in Moab, even though it's the only place she can be guaranteed protection as a vulnerable widow, as a woman in her society. Instead, she does something very brave. She casts her lots with her mother-in-law, Naomi, and bravely follows her heart into a new land, a new home in Israel, a place she knows nothing about, like the Alamor family coming from Syria to America. Ruth pleads with Naomi, "Do not press me to leave you or turn back from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people." How many of us are like Ruth, refugees from ravaged homelands, forming new bonds of intimacy with those we have come to love, chosen to love, as I did when I left Pittsburgh for Boston and a life with my future husband in 1978. These new bonds of intimacy are by no means emotional consolation prizes. When Ruth declares, "Your people shall be my people, where you lodge, I will lodge," she means it with her whole heart and whole being. It is as if she is saying, "Let us make a home together, Naomi, a home that never closes. Let us belong to one another." That is what so many of us have sought for ourselves and for our families out of necessity or choice, to courageously carry home with us to a new address and create that healthy place of connection and belonging. It's certainly my story, but with a homecoming that I could never have predicted in 1978 when I woke at dawn and steered my dented orange Saab eastward out of town into the burgeoning sunrise. My reasons for leaving Pittsburgh were simple and they were complex. First, I was too big for Pittsburgh, or so I thought, too hip, too bohemian, too sophisticated, for that colloquial little burg. More significantly, though, even if I wasn't admitting this to myself, my sense of home had really been shaken to the core. The kind of security and joy I'd experienced in my baby boomer childhood of chip-chopped ham, hand-dipped Klondikes, and sandlot dusk baseball in the corner, actually painted into the corner of Phillips and Pecosette Streets. That had just imploded. The decade after my departure was grim. My parents divorced, my mother died of cancer at age 55, and my father remarried into an inhospitable situation. I was adrift, and Pittsburgh didn't feel like a home that never closes anymore. In fact, I was convinced that Pittsburgh had said goodbye to me and handed me my hat. It was easier that way. Much like the writer Sandra Cisneros, I was a girl who decided she didn't want to belong. In her book, The House on Mango Street, Cisneros writes, "We didn't always live on Mango Street, in the sad red house I do not belong to. I put it down on paper, and then the ghost does not ache so much. I write it down, and Mango says goodbye sometimes. She does not hold me with both arms. She sets me free. Friends and neighbors will say, 'What happened to that Esperanza? Where did she go with all those books and paper? And why did she march so far away?' They will not know that I have gone away to come back for the ones I left behind, for the ones who did not out. Like Cisneros, I marched far away and I made a life, a good life, but Pittsburgh was always in my rearview mirror for more than 3 decades, and sometimes you have to travel a long distance in order to appreciate the treasure that's hidden right under your hearth. I began itching to leave Boston in 2009 and considered marching off to Asheville or Boulder or Austin or some other ridiculously cliched destination of reinvention. Pittsburgh would bubble up and I'd push it down again. And then in December of 2010, a way opened, which I still cannot fully explain. And this Esperanza decided to come back for the ones that she left behind. I would say after taking this journey away from home and back that I've returned, I suppose, as a prodigal daughter, but also as a wiser woman with an open heart, learning you can come home to exhale, replant, to grieve, to make a joyful noise, to wave a terrible towel, to become known again, to frolic in Frick Park with your dog, to stop yearning. And you know, my leave-taking, it turned out, was not mutual. Pittsburgh had loved me all along, holding me with her long, steel-reinforced arms even as she set me free. And Pittsburgh is like that. And it's good to be back, to be home. In all of this talk about leaving and coming home, there is a metaphor for my spiritual life, for our spiritual lives. As Unitarian Universalists, nearly 80% of us are come outers from other religions, other religious homes of origin. And most likely, the reason we've embraced Unitarian Universalism is because these houses of worship are no longer homes to us. And we've grieved, and we've experienced the pain of this alienation. So out of this spiritual homelessness, we have carried our longing with us to a new religious home and forged new bonds of soulful intimacy around our flaming chalice. Like many come-outers to this faith, I came home to myself spiritually when I found Unitarian Universalism. Church was a strange land, to be sure, for this nice bat mitzvah girl from Squirrel Hill. Yet, like Ruth, I cast my lots with the Naomis of UU churches throughout New England, in Pittsburgh, and now here, with this wonderful community of fellow travelers in Meadville. My affiliation with church threatened and confused some of my Jewish childhood friends, and it may threaten and confuse your Catholic friends or Baptist friends or atheist friends or family members. And that's okay. I am at home here. One of the so-called chosen people or not, Unitarian Universalism is my chosen faith, our chosen faith. And isn't this notion of home, a home that never closes, a sanctuary for all seekers, what we can and should aspire to as Unitarian Universalists? Especially in today's torn world and America, in which there is genuine, valid fear about the treatment of marginalized groups, we are exactly what this country needs right now. A dependable, historic, courageous voice for freedom, reason, and tolerance. Last week, I posted, it didn't copy very well. It had a beautiful blue background. Some of you may have seen that I posted this on the church's Facebook page. And I boosted the post. And it says, "This home is a sanctuary. This home welcomes anyone who is seeking comfort, safety, protection, or escape from hatred, bullying, or abuse. If you are an immigrant, LGBTQ, Muslim, a woman, a refugee, a person of color, disabled, or discriminated against in any way, you are welcome here, and you will be protected, nurtured, and safe." As I said, I boosted the post, which means I paid a little money, put in some keywords, and it reached over 3,000 people. Over almost 400 people engaged with the post. Almost 100 people liked and commented on the post. This is more than we have ever received on anything we've ever put on our Facebook page. And I'll tell you, publicly and unapologetically proclaiming our commitment to offer refuge, sustenance, and love does not make us a social justice church. It makes us a Unitarian Universalist church in the deepest and most authentic sense of those words. We can make that identity tangible in so many ways, including these guest at your table boxes that we talked about. Consider how your spare change, shared from the warmth and safety of your home, can help the UUSC defy hate and assist families like the Alamores. How they must know, the Alamores and others, the desperation and pain in the poem by Worsan Shire that Stu read for us. She writes, "No one leaves home until home is a sweaty voice in your ear saying, 'Leave, run away from me now. I don't know what I've become, but I know that anywhere is safer than here.'" I'm reminded again of Ruth and Naomi and my young son, Sam. When I consider what we stand for in these congregations, our congregation, to paraphrase, I would say, we will not turn you back. We will not lock the door. In the heart of our flaming chalice, we will keep the home fires burning for you. Your people will be our people. We are and shall be a home that never closes for you. And it's my hope that you will perceive this church as a landmark where, through spiritual searching and growth, you will find the compass bearings that will lead you to discover how to create a safe inner home for your core self, a place where you feel welcomed and sheltered for the worthy, lovable person you are, no matter where you roam. So how might you make it home safe to this home that never closes? Is it time to rediscover the treasure under your hearth? Or are you due to march away from Mango Street towards safety? If you are in some form of self-exile, how might you make your way back? Only you know what specters pursue you in the shadows, as they did me, as you make a journey homeward to a place of belonging. In her book, No Place Like Home, fellow UU and former Boston Globe columnist Linda Weltner recalls the memory from her daughter's childhood. She writes, "Night after night, through the long summers and into the autumn, the neighborhood children used to play hide and seek, streaming out into the gray twilight as soon as the dishes were cleared from the dining room table. Gathering in the street, they quickly divided into hiders and seekers, fanning out behind garages and backyards that encircled the steps that represented home base. In the dark, my husband Jack and I would often see small figures sneaking past our wall, their bodies tense and ready for the long sprint to the steps. In years past, one or the other of our daughters would return from the game so far past bedtime it was never mentioned. 'How'd you do?' we'd call out to a child radiant with the glory of late hours and star-studded sky. 'I got home safe,' she'd whisper proudly before slipping up to bed. 'I got home safe.' This is my Thanksgiving prayer for us all. Whether it be around a bountiful dining room table or a glistening chalice in a makeshift refugee camp or a brick castle, may we make it through the creeping shadows, through streets devoid of landmarks, and through the dead of night. May we find our way home to the embrace of beloveds, to this community of acceptance, and to the sanctuary of ourselves, where we may abide with grateful hearts, home safe in a home that never closes. So may it be. Amen."